And now, your host for Wrestling Weekly, Doc Young and legendary Les Thatcher.
Welcome, everybody. Doc Young, Les Thatcher, Wrestling Weekly, guys. We've got a special one-hour show tonight.
No, actually, we got a special 51-minute show. We were supposed to start at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. For those of you who have been at your computers, I hope anxiously awaiting. I've been home anxiously awaiting. Anyway, in a time glitch, and I think we're going to do a TV show special about that called Journeyman or something. I think it starts in the fall where you can actually rewrite history. We'll back this up by 9 minutes and go again. Anyway, this is a 51-minute edition because Les is out of here at 9 o'clock. We're going to do an hour. Why, I'm not sure, but we're going to do an hour. Well, no, we're not doing an hour. Actually, we're doing 51 minutes. I'm doing 51 minutes. Doc's going to do an hour.
Jody Hamilton's going to be on the show tonight.
I hope Jody will understand when I hang up at 9 o'clock on the money.
He will understand, I'm sure.
Okay.
I want to get right into it. Let's get into the news. Of course, there's some trademark news. I want to start with that tonight.
Trademark news?
Trademark news.
I hope it's entertaining because I can think of 50 things I'd rather talk about than trademarks. Go ahead.
Well, we don't have to start with that. We can also, we can start the show how
Go ahead. I don't even know what you're talking about. I thought I looked around the boards, but I guess I missed the trademark news.
Well, some of the trademarks that are going out right now are being opposed by WWE. They've been on a tear this week. They're opposing the trademark, of course, TNA's trademarks for VKM. It should be noted that WWE is also opposing TNA trying to register for the Voodookin Mafia trademark as well.
You know what? Voodookin Mafia, they can have VKM. I understand why. And it's you know what? The company, the TNA company needs to spend more time bettering themselves and not so much about trying to be a thorn in the side of the giant. If David's going to slew Goliath, David should pay more attention to business.
Right.
And less attention to that BS.
Right.
Okay.
Along
the same, while we're at TNA and doing stupid things, let's talk about Pac-Man Jones.
Pac-Man Jones.
Which actually, to me, is more important and more newsworthy than trademarks. On Pardon the Interruption on ESPN, which I watch or I record and try to watch every night. It's on 5:30 to 6 Eastern Standard Time each weeknight. They didn't know what TNA was.
They had
no clue. But I hope Jeff Fisher, who's the head coach of the Tennessee Titans, for those of you who don't follow football, said there'll be no way that Pac-Man Jones will be in a wrestling ring. And I say yay for Jeff Fisher. I say this has to be one of the stupidest decisions of the year 2007 for anybody, because this guy has been arrested 10 times. Okay. Are you looking for, some idiots think that any publicity is good publicity, and I'd say this is not the case all the time. Some of the time that's probably true. In this case, on the heels of the Benoit tragedy, the Cronus death, the government wanting to check into WWE's drug records, or steroid testing records, or drug testing records, not just steroids. This has to be one of the dumbest decisions I've heard, and I don't care who made it. If it was God, then God's a dummy, okay? This guy is not playing football for a year because he can't keep himself out of trouble.
Right.
And so let's hire him so we can get bad publicity.
This is along the lines of...
You can move right on past that. Please don't be devil's advocate because you've only got 47 minutes to be silly. Okay.
WWE.com's reporting that Bobby Lashley suffered a torn rotator cuff. Not during Raw last night. Of course, it was on Raw last night. They did do an injury angle. But what it's believed is that he had had this injury recently, not too long ago.
April.
And Yes, in April.
That's not too long ago. But you know how? You know what? See, here's a stupid. And when I again, do I am I using the word stupid here a lot tonight? This, you know, you don't work through something April, May, June, July, and this is the 1st of August,
mm-hmm.
right? Or well, actually, it's not. Tomorrow's the 1st of August, and so guess what? That's not just recently. That's silly. But see, and they're to me, you know, if you're pulling things out of the closet that are problems of this industry, there's one right there. Why is this guy working through that for this period of time? Because he's not sure if he's got a spot, or because he's green as grass and he has to be carried. I mean, I don't know, Bobby. I'm not saying he's not a nice guy and he doesn't deserve a push or anything like that. What I'm saying is, I don't care if this is whoever this is. That's silly.
Right.
That's bad. You get no longevity that way.
I think
this could be much more serious. It could have, you know, if it could have taken care of back in April or May. Maybe he would. Is he going to have surgery? I don't know. I don't know what the problem is. But anyway, no. From an athlete's standpoint, from a coach's standpoint, it's silly.
And this is something that I believe you talked about, well, on the show before, but last week in particular, when you said that some of these guys are working through some of these injuries and things like that, because they're afraid of losing their spots.
Yeah, well, you're right. And now, if the government intervention, well, we might as well throw that in here, too. There's enough idiots running this business that don't know anything about it. I doubt that we need government doing that. Now, if the government come in and say no more ladder matches, I'm up with that. If they come in and say every guy needs the fourth month off for, you know, and to be checked out, you know, physically to see if he's healthy and mentally healthy, I'm up with that.
Mm-hmm.
So from afar, there's enough with stupid network and network executives' interventions and thinking they know how to. You know, there was a baseball manager just a couple weeks ago said when someone told him that a particular pitcher's agent said that he was throwing too many pitches and that agent felt that he should be handled differently, this manager said, and I think I'm quoting here, you know, when he lets me start negotiating contracts for his athletes, I'll let him start running his team. That's the way I feel about network people running wrestling, or people that have no idea about wrestling running wrestling. And that's part of, you know, so do I want to see government run the business? I absolutely do not. If they can find a way to keep the athletes alive and healthy, I'm really not, you know, adverse to that. But I think this is part of the deal, you know. Do you have your spot? I was talking to D'Lo Brown yesterday, as a matter of fact, just a social visit. And when I mentioned that, he said, man, you've just hit the nail on the head.
Yeah.
You know?
That was about what I was about to say. Yeah, you pretty much said it all.
You know, well, but I mean, that's it. You know, a baseball, if Ken Griffey Jr. goes down here and he's been out, here's a guy who's making $15 million a year, or $12 million, or whatever it is, I don't even know. It's more than I'll ever make in a lifetime. But anyway, the point is, Griffey's the top guy. He's had been plagued with injuries in different seasons since he's been here in Cincinnati, which is where he's born and raised, and that's the reason they brought him back from Seattle. But anyway, it's not like the guy doesn't have a job when he comes back, even if he's off for half a season or 2 weeks or 3 months or whatever it happens to be.
Right.
He's got a contract. He's got a spot. And the other part of it is, one of the biggest problems in our business is this silliness of independent contractor nonsense. If I'm an independent contractor, then I can work for who I want, when I want. I can be the character I want. I can wear the clothes I want.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have to name me one wrestler that works for either WWE or TNA that is allowed to do that.
Right.
You can't, can you? Well,
no.
Okay, Jeff Jarrett and Helmsley. One, okay?
Yeah.
So now, and maybe they can, I don't know. But, I mean, the point is, so you're not independent contractors. That's just a way of not having to pay workers' comp and so forth and so on. So anyway, if the government's going to do anything, that's the direction I would say. Again, I don't want to see the government come in to run wrestling. I'm not interested in that. For those of you who have always said, well, I wish wrestling were mainstream, well, it is now. Barry Bonds and that saga is going on in baseball. The Michael Vick and killing off dogs and fighting them is going on in football. So now wrestling has joined the elite. I'm not sure that's positive.
No, I don't think so either.
Well, you know, but maybe some of the practices in our business that have been under the radar shouldn't have been. And you know, when it comes to guys' welfare and health, and the other, while we're speaking of health and welfare, Jeff Hardy was sent home last night.
Yes. Just about to get to that.
And I will speculate, but I won't say it out loud. Why? Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's sad. That's a sad thing to say, too. But anyway, that's on the heels of the Lashley thing last night. And I want to say that Cody Rhodes has got my vote for one reason. Not because I really think the kid still has a lot of seasoning, but he actually walks to the ring like he's going to kick somebody's butt. He doesn't wave his arms and joke and jump and yell and scream and have seizures,
right.
Which seems to be the standard issue for virtually everybody from the worst independent promotion right on up to the top of the line. And but he comes out like an athlete. I think that's exciting. It's different almost. But anyway, yeah, I the government thing with Lashley, if they're going to get involved, there's the deal. Find a way for these guys to be able to take time off so they don't shorten their career by having to work through injuries.
Right.
Let me throw one in here, and this is on a sad note, and of course most of you guys won't even know who I'm talking about here. Carl Gotch passed away Saturday at the age of 82. Carl Gotch was a legitimate tough guy. I mean, a legitimate tough guy. Right up there with Thez and Ad Santel and Gotch and Hackenschmidt and on and on and on. This guy could hurt you 60,000 different ways. He had trained at the Snake Pit in England, but, you know, very respected within the industry and probably not used by a lot of promoters as well as he could be because they were afraid if they put a belt on him, he would decide not to take it off and they couldn't do anything about it.
yeah, I've heard that, yes.
Dean Malenko and his brother Joe trained with Carl. Carl was living in Columbus, Ohio when I broke into business, and I saw him as before I got in the business, but I never got to wrestle him. He was quite a European gentleman. I enjoyed conversing with him in locker rooms. One thing I do remember in hearing him mention, not to me necessarily, but just in the course of conversation, this was back in the early 60s, that he wasn't really excited about watching these guys wear sequin jackets and stuff, so my young mind cataloged that, and when I knew Carl was on a card that I was working on, I didn't take sequin jackets because I wasn't interested in incurring his wrath.
Right.
Never had a chance, never wrestled him or worked with him or anything, but had a lot of respect for the man. I mean, he was a tough SOB. A friend of mine, Kim Wood, the former strength coach of the Bengals, has a workout tape of Carl training, putting a South American wrestler through one of his torturous training sessions down in Florida. I don't know how long ago this was. But if you could see this, I would guarantee you that less than I could probably count on one hand the guys in this business today at any level that could actually go through this. It's just that tough. But Carl, you know, for those of us who revere history in the business and actually, you know, understand it, you know, he was quite the guy, quite a gentleman. He'll be missed.
I know it's not like, you know, there's no foul play or anything, but exactly, was there anything as far as why he died?
No, I did not. Well, just old age, I guess, maybe at 82.
Right.
You know, health issues, I don't really know. You know, there was no, at least I haven't seen anything, and I haven't talked to anybody that knew any more than that, so no.
It's a sad story, and it's a real piece of history right there.
Well, yeah, and God knows that we need to study that a little bit more.
Right.
Chris Canyon did a two-hour interview with CNN, and they are putting together a documentary on professional wrestling.
Yes.
And he's one of the people that they're you know, this is not going to go away anytime soon.
No.
You know, and they're going to pull the skeletons out of the closets. And, you know, I can't say I'm excited about it, but I can't say I can argue with it either, you know?
Right.
It's probably been a long time coming, and you know, it's just, you know, it's going to happen, and so I don't know that's going to happen.
I'm surprised he actually went ahead and went through with this because, well, you know, he had put it, you know, you got two choices when you're going to do something like this. You can be honest and possibly hurt the business, or two, you can lie and protect it, you know.
Well, you know what, and I'm not going to name names, but there have been a lot of people on television lately lying and defending it. mm-hmm. and some that maybe they have an axe to grind. And I listen, do I think I could have been treated better in this business and made more money? Sure. Mm-hmm. Would I love to have this, you know, be able to in a situation to make money like these kids are? Sure, but I'm not mad at anybody.
Right.
But you know what? I mentioned Bobby. I'm just using Bobby Lashley as an example. I don't know Bobby Lashley. I have no personal feelings for the kid one way or the other. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to see him injured. I don't want to see him crippled. I don't want to see him dead.
Right.
You know, and I do have a high regard for this business, and I have a passion for it, and I love it. And I think maybe that comes across. I don't know when I talk about it. But, you know, can it be clean? Can it be run more efficiently in terms of keeping guys healthy so forth? So, yeah, sure it can. I don't know that there's anything. Well, you know, here's something, and I don't mean to sound sacrilegious to those who might take it this way. As far as I know, there's only one person that was one thing that was perfect in this world, and they drove nails through his hands and hung him on a cross.
Right.
So maybe being, you know, so, past that, I don't know that anybody was or anything was. So, yeah, can you improve? I think you can improve on most everything.
Yeah.
And you can improve on the way our business is run. I won't argue that. I don't know what Ken is going to say, you know. But I want to throw out a something here to everybody. If you watch Rock Love on VH1, it's about the leader of Poison.
Yeah.
Okay, have you seen it?
I think I saw the second episode.
Okay, well, the head of security, Big John Murray,
mm-hmm.
John wrestled for me.
Did he?
Yeah, he grew up here in the Norwood subdivision, Cincinnati, Norwood section.
Yeah, that's cool.
And John trained with me several months. Good guy. Love him to death. He was one of the guys who wanted to kick the snot out of the kid in Chicago on the True Life series. And I said, no, John, you can't do that. I'm not necessarily into Poison, and those type of reality shows aren't really my cup of tea. But when I found out John was going to be on, I said, yeah, I'm going to check it out because I love John to death. He's a good guy. So... And I'll tell you what, I've never seen so many adult women act like stupid, slutty children in my life. Honestly.
Fame and money will do that.
I'm amazed by it. I really am. But anyway, yeah, so Big John is a buddy of mine. Haven't seen him in a long time. The funny thing is, that's, you know, when he was training with, he was doing some security for different bands because he worked at a club here called Annie's and did security there. So anyway... That's how he got the job with Poison, and there's a couple of Stray Cats, and I forget who else he does security for. But anyway, that he found out was a bigger passion for him and more immediate income, I think. So
right.
Anyway, he chose that direction and does real well for himself. So.
Another buddy of ours is doing a reality show, Les.
Who's that?
Rosie from WWE.
Well, I'm going to tell you there's another kid named Sammy that's on that show. They'll tell you on that show that he's a massage therapist.
Mm-hmm.
But Sammy also wrestled, I can't think of his ring name now, but Sammy and his partner Tony have been in several camps that I've done with Ricky. And I've worked in two or three camps down in North Carolina and one up in New England, 2 and 3 day fairs. And Sammy called me the other day. I can't tell you how much weight he lost, but he's also on that. So, yeah, I mean, I've got people that I've trained with all over these realities.
Yeah, it's a small world.
I hope they all make a lot of money.
Absolutely. Rosie's show is going to be, it's called Fat March. It's going to be on ABC.
It's called what?
It's called Fat March.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay.
It's going to be on ABC starting Monday. So check it out, guys.
Does it start Monday?
It starts Monday.
On ABC. Okay,
on ABC.
I will have to...
And Rosie will be joining us in August.
He will.
Yes, to talk about
God, I love surprises.
The show and stuff like that, so that's pretty cool. But we're going to take a break, guys. When we come back, we've got our featured guest.
We do?
Yes, our featured guest.
I know we have a featured guest, but that's right, I forgot. This is the condensed 31-second version
of our show. This is the quickie version, man.
Yes, okay.
Jody Hamill.
Doc, I'm not up for quickies on it. I like to draw things out and make them mean something. If you don't.
Jody Hamilton's going to be with us, though.
Yes, he is.
So stay tuned, guys. You're listening to Doc Young and Les Thatcher. It's Wrestling Weekly.
Wrestling Weekly will return to all the fun right after this.
What are you doing? You having fun?
I'm having a blast.
Wrestling-radio.com for the latest news in professional wrestling.
watching of videos, and promoting your own independent wrestling organization or radio show the way that you want it done, log on to wrestling-radio.com. Sign up today and get weekly archiving of your shows. Advertise your show on the main website. And also listen to other great wrestling radio shows, such as The Squared Circle, The Minority Report, Evan's Legends, and many more. And you could be the next one. Log on today at wrestling-radio.com and begin promoting your wrestling organization or radio show the way that you want it done. We promise you, you won't be disappointed. Wrestling-radio.com, the Internet's leader in wrestling radio promotion.
What triggers the attention of a pro wrestling fan? Is it the overall ability of the superstar? Is it the angles with a mixture of drama? What drives the fans wanting to learn more about this pastime? When it reaches a boiling point and you know you're hooked on the thrill, it's no longer considered just a passion. It's an obsession.
Your favorite all-in-one online wrestling site has changed. That's right, wrestling fans. If you are obsessed with everything wrestling, check out the same site with the new name, Online World of Wrestling. As crazy as it may sound, the same content you have come to know, expect, and rely on is still there on every single page of the site under a new name. If you're looking for the most comprehensive information on the entire world of wrestling, then head on over to www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Online World of Wrestling still supplies you with all the news and information, plus galleries and bios of your favorite all-time wrestlers. Climb aboard as we head on over to onlineworldofwrestling.com. New packaging, same great flavor.
Yo, check out the new hot wrestling shop called Mad Maniacs. With a large inventory of shirts, replica belts, and action figures you can obtain and need for wrestling merchandise. Remember that we get fresh stock weekly, so don't forget to check it out. Also, with items coming in faster than Toys R Us and Walmart, you should never become disappointed. Plus half the price on WWE.com. Remember, that's www.madmaniacs.com.
Wrestling-radio.com, the internet's newest wrestling radio promotion. We offer a direct link to your wrestling radio website, a personal profile, and a control panel to maintain your own shows. And it's all free. That's right, 100% free. Wrestling-radio.com promotes some of the best online wrestling radio shows today, such as The Main Event with Chris, Woody and Will, The Irish Whip with Big Joe and JP, The Yard with Moondog, Wrestling Weekly with Doc Young and the legendary Les Thatcher, plus many more. So what are you waiting for? Sign up today and watch your show grow. For more information, log on to www.wrestling-radio.com today.
Doc Young and Les Thatcher back with you at Wrestling Weekly. Welcome back, guys. On the line right now is our featured guest for the week. He is the owner of Deep South Wrestling out there in Georgia. Jody Hamilton is with us. Jody, I want to thank you for being on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
And no, you made me look good the other day without even trying.
That was a miracle. How'd I do that?
You've been trying to do it for years and couldn't work, right? I was surfing around on some websites, and there's one wrestling board about our time, and they were saying about who was the youngest guy to ever headline a major show, and I looked good because I said Joe Hamilton, Madison Square Garden. Everybody was sitting all around. You know, I mean, they weren't even coming close, and I said, "Hey, I know the answer to that, man."
How old were you at that time?
19. Yeah. As a matter of fact, a guy called me, yesterday, and wanted to know if I had a printed up card. And I was just sitting there looking at it, as a matter of fact, because he's going to stop by the house tomorrow and pick it up and everything. And I was just looking at the Madison Square Garden card, May 24, 1958.
Wow.
Paid attendance, 20,355. The largest crowd to date in the history of the old Madison Square Garden.
Oh, terrific. Yeah. So when did you actually start training to wrestle? How old were you at that time?
Oh, let's see. I was... When I started training, actually, I was about 16, I guess.
16? And how long back then between, you know, training and having your first match? I don't know, like, I know
you know, back then
we
never really had a place to train, you know, and the only place we had was the old YMCA, and all we had up there was those old-style, real rough tumbling mats that you put a couple of 4x6 mats together, and there was no Velcro or no strings to tie them together or anything, so by the time you'd move around on them a little bit, you know, they had the big gaps, and you take a bump, and you hit the floor with your elbow and the back of your head and everything, you know, so, I mean, it was really a dangerous situation. But I learned, I guess, a hell of a lot from just watching, and I had some natural ability, I guess, and when it come time to throw me in the ring and everything, nobody really knew. I had no prior notice that it was going to happen. I had nothing, you know. And we were, as a matter of fact, Johnny Weaver and I pulled the ring for old Gus Karras to Lamona, Iowa, there at Grayson College. And we worked out for a little bit in the ring. That was the only thing, the only time we ever had an opportunity to work out in a ring was if I, you know, was on the crew to go set it up, pull it and set it up. And we worked out for a little bit in the ring, and then sitting in the dressing room that night, and I remember the promoter was an old carny named Bob Craddock, and he walked up to me and he said, "You got your gear slick?" And I said, "Yeah, I got it." He said, "Well," he said, "get it on." He said, "We're getting your cherry tonight."
Sweet.
And that was my introduction to the mat, to the business, first match.
Now, today it's sort of easy to at least break into the business and start training. I mean, it seems like there's training camps all over the place and things like that. But back in the day when you started out, how did you go from watching wrestling to actually being accepted into the fraternity, I guess, if you will, of wrestlers?
You worked the carnivals. Worked the actual and the carnivals.
Mm-hmm.
That was about the only training facilities they had available in those days, you know. My brother went the carnival route, and so did I, you know. I was fortunate enough to where I didn't last very long on the carnival route. And I got a opportunity to actually start full-time in the business, and I did on September the 3rd, 1957. Oddly enough, it was in New York. And my brother was wrestling up there at the time, and then we stayed there from September up until just a few days before Christmas, and then we left, went back home, and then we came back right shortly after the first of the year in 58, and that's when they decided to give us a little push for the put us in a garden show.
The at shows were a world all unto themselves, weren't they, Joe?
That carnival life is a world all of its own.
Yes, it is, brother.
You know,
I sleeping in summers with Santa
and
something.
All types of weather and everything, you know, and the best shelter you can get. You really don't want to sleep in the bed of one of them tractor trailers because it's so hot, especially in the summertime, you know.
Right.
But sometimes when it's a storm and everything, you had no choice, you know. And then setting up some of those rides that they had back in those days and everything was unbelievable because they didn't have a whole lot of modern day equipment, you know. They had a couple of hoists and stuff like that, but most everything was set up just strictly with manpower, and you get enough guys on there and, you know, you lift the world. But it was an unbelievable lifestyle, you know, and there was no money, you know. My God, I think they paid my brother when he was on the carnival, I think for a week, I think they paid him like $14 or something like that, $14-15, you know, and he was taking all comers, and sometimes having to go a couple of times a night for every night they were set up, you know.
That's, and you talk about the heat. Those tents that the rings were set up in the middle of July and August.
There was no ventilation or anything. You know?
Yeah, exactly. And then you pack them full with people, man. It was a pressure cooker.
Yeah, and then full of hostile people.
Yes,
because you're always wrestling or fight or boxing some local, you know.
Right.
And they always want to see you get massacred, you know.
So yes. the circus shows where they're actually. You know, set up on these shows where it's two wrestlers against each other, or is it always wrestler versus fan?
Yeah, sometimes they did business and had one of the unknown wrestlers planted in the audience and stuff. You know, that would they go out and have a hell of a match with the guys and everything. But about 90% of the time, it was wrestler versus fan, or boxer versus fan, or both. You know. And when my brother was on there, he did both. He wrestled or boxed anybody in the audience, you know.
Has anybody ever tried, like, I don't know if it's happened or if you've seen it, is what I'm asking, basically, is if a fan ever tried to sneak a weapon in?
In the carnival?
Into the ring.
Nah, I never did see it.
Did you ever get into a hay rube?
Oh, did I ever? Yeah.
Tell Doc what that means. You and I know what it means.
I know. I'm lost.
The whole bally, you know, the whole midway and empty. You know, the first sign of trouble and everything, all the carnival workers, that was their key word, that was their byword. Hey, Rube, and everything. That means there was a hell of a fight going on somewhere. You know, and usually it was in the ad show.
Yeah. Yep.
Or if there was a couple of isolated cases, I guess. Now, when I was out on the carnival and my brother was out on the carnival, Gus Karras owned it. Till, you know, and later on, of course, Sonny Myers bought him out, but. When Gus owned it, all the games and everything were legitimate games, you know, all the games of chance, we'll put it that way. And so on. But every once in a while, there'd be a new guy come along on the circuit and everything that was trying to rig everything, so there'd be no possible way any of the people could win the game, you know what I'm saying? So when that had happened, if Gus found out about it, Gus would run their ass off right quick. But sometimes Gus was unaware that it was going on, and the local cops or whatever would pick up on it, you know, and, oh, my God. Sometimes the townspeople would almost run everybody out of town, you know.
Yeah. I'll tell you, I got in with a guy you know, and I was 19. I was refereeing this particular one. I've wrestled in them. I've done the take-on, you know. I was taking on younger guys, teenagers and stuff, but refereed and worked with, you know, if there wasn't anybody picking up challenges, they put a couple of us in and work a show. But anyway, Ronnie Hill had a mark, and the mark had been drinking, and his brother-in-law was with him, and we had a tent full, and the mark, I got smart with Ronnie. It's been too many years ago to remember exactly what he did, but, you know, got feisty with Ronnie instead of just trying to wrestle him. Ronnie hooked him in what wrestling fans would think is a camel clutch. And I'm watching the guy's eyes roll back in his head, and I said, Ronnie, cut him loose. You're going to kill him, Ronnie. Ronnie said, F him. And I said, and the brother-in-law was drunk, and he tried to come in the ring, and it was on, brother. And thank God there was two, I think we were in New Hampshire or Maine, I'm not sure at a fair, and there were some of Joey Chitwood's guys, and a friend of mine from here in town, who I ran around with as a kid, drove for Chitwood, but he wasn't on this particular crew, but that's how I'd hooked up with these guys. So they were right there to help out, but then a bunch of other guys and then a couple of highway patrolmen came in, man. But I thought, we're going to die here in this ring, because, like Joe says, there was Ronnie and I in the ring, and I don't know, 60, 70, 100 people out there on the floor
that I didn't know, man. Some of those ad show tents and everything, you know, you could get 125 to 150 people in there. I mean, you got them crammed in there like sardines in a can.
Yeah.
You could still get that many in there, you know, and the environment was not conducive to mild temperament anyway, because it was always so hot and so crowded and so miserable in there, and everybody was standing anyway.
Right.
You know, and man, it didn't really take a whole hell of a lot to trigger those tempers.
No, it didn't, man. But that was the worst one. I thought if I never, you know, I did two summers with Santos up in New England on the fairs, and that was enough for me, brother.
Yeah,
that was all she wrote.
Now, you've had a long, long storied career. Of course, one of the most famous phases was being one of the assassins with Tom Ernesto.
Yeah.
But the recent, I guess, phase of your career has been promoting this Deep South Wrestling in Atlanta.
Yeah, the last couple of years has been, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you a question.
Sure.
And, you know, because I went down this same road. You know, I had a developmental deal with WWE, and then they pulled it. And you shut down for a short period of time. What made you decide to, I mean, just your love for the business, or what exactly made you decide to come back and open Deep South up again?
I never did shut it down. And we just,
did you not?
We just had to to make some adjustments.
I see.
You know, and so on. And, you know, I'm pushing that 70 mark pretty hard. But by the same token, I'm not ready to retire. I will never retire. As long as I'm able to walk and get around a little bit, and everything, I'm not ever going to retire. That's not my, retirement is not in my mentality, you know. And I think that as long as physically I can't do a hell of a lot anymore and wouldn't try, even attempt to keep up with some of these young guys. But by the same token, I don't think there's anything wrong with me mentally. According to some people, that's up for speculation, you know. But I feel like I've got a wealth of knowledge. 51 years I've been in this business, and I got 51 years of knowledge stored up in my head, you know. And I want to try to relay the knowledge that's in my head into some of these young kids and everything. So, if for no other reason, for the betterment of the business.
You know what, Joe? I think J.J. Dillon made this statement a couple years ago, but I think he's right. I think when guys from our generation stop wanting to train the current guys, there are going to be the business is going to wither a lot worse than it has, because I think we're the ones that have really got the grip on the foundation of the thing.
Well, you know, who's left?
Exactly.
Who's left to teach the psychology of the business and so on when we're gone? Because, you know, like Doc was saying a while ago, there's 100 training camps all over the country. You know, hell, there's probably 100 of them here in Georgia.
Right.
And everything. All independent stuff and everything. But who are they run by? They're run by guys that have never done anything really in the business.
Right.
And so on. So what it really boils down to is you can't teach what you do not know.
Right. Thank you.
You know, and it's as simple as that. And that's why a lot of these kids, you know, I'm using a lot of real green kids that they're all from the independent circuits and so on now. But by the same token, I see some of these kids and everything, and I see tremendous potential in them. But they will never realize their potential because they don't have anybody left to teach them, you know. Unless somebody like me comes along and takes them under my wing, they're never going to learn, you know. And the unfortunate and bad thing about the independent circuit, and this is not a knock to the performers on the independent circuit, you know, and what happens is, through their own natural ability, they will reach a certain level.
Right.
But because they will never, in the independent circuit, they will never have the opportunity to work consistently with people that are better than they are. So consequently, they will level off at a certain stage of their career and never, ever get any better. They will never realize their true potential because they're never going to be in a position to work with people that are better than they are. And
yes,
that's the
sir.
Only way you're going to learn. You've got to go out there and be in that ring. You know, my greatest learning experience and throughout my entire career was the 2 years that I spent in and out of Amarillo, Texas. Because every night that I was there, I worked with some of the greatest workers in the business. You know, you're talking about Iron Mike DiBiase, you know, you're talking about Sonny Myers. My God, to me, Sonny Myers was the greatest all-around performer this business has ever had. And he never got nowhere near the credit that he deserved for his ability that he actually had. And Sonny Myers was a master of psychology. He was a master of moves. He was a big, long, rangy, lanky, raw-boned farmer. And he was strong as a goddamn ox, but by the same token, he had tremendous coordination, and he had tremendous ring savvy. And, I worked with him so many times and everything, but every night it was an education. You know, I got my master's degree in this business in Amarillo in the 2 years that I was there.
You know, I've said before that I've told kids of the day, I said, you know, when I started this, I was working three nights a week at least, and I said every time I changed territories, it's like going to a new school because you had different veterans giving you another avenue.
Another perspective on it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And you're right. The problem with the kids today is they're working with guys at their own level. And well, I was working with two kids on Saturday, and they kept apologizing for, where I would correct them. I said, listen, you guys, I said, you don't know. You know, you both are at the same level, so you're making mistakes. You're relatively sure of that, but you don't know what is a mistake and what is the right way.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and the thing about it is, you know, and the kids of today have got a couple of advantages that we didn't have, but we had advantages that they don't have.
Sure.
It all balances out. You know, back in my day, I had the advantage that the kids don't have today of being able to work every night in the ring with masters. You know,
exactly.
And that's how I perfected my craft and so on. Now, these kids have got video cameras and they've got tapes and so on, so they can utilize that. But it's like reading a foreign language in a book, sitting there watching their own tapes and stuff. They may be able to pick up on the glaring mistakes and so on, but they're not going to pick up on the important mistakes because they don't know what the hell they're looking for anyway.
You're right.
Unless somebody like me or Les or somebody is sitting there critiquing their performance in that particular match that we're watching on the videotape and so on, like I say, hell, they might as well be reading a book in Russian,
right?
Because it means nothing to them. They don't know what the hell to look for.
You know, I want to get your input on this too. Having worked in the developmental system, and I keep preaching that they need to expand that and really sink money into it. Not only them, but I think TNA needs to do the same thing. And if Ring of Honor is going to grow, it probably needs to do the same thing because, as you say, the independent trainers, some of these guys have been in the business 15 minutes, are trying to train people. They're just not going to be able to pick because there's no territories to pick guys from anymore. I read after the relationship between you and WWE had been severed, you had mentioned you were about cooperating, you weren't about being controlled. And that's, to me, is, you know, it's like, well, where you're at, the Braves, they've got farm clubs, and they've got to pay attention to what those managers and the farm clubs and the coaches are saying because they're with those kids day in and day out, and they can't be running, say, the Richmond, Virginia farm club from Atlanta.
Right.
They've got to allow you to do for the reason you were hired to begin with.
Yeah, I agree. And, of course, to me, the most important thing that any company that has a developmental system needs to do is, if you know, they need to let people that have the experience and people that have wrestling backgrounds decide what talent is going to be pulled up and what talent is going to be utilized up there, and let
yes.
the and let the writers and so on do their job by creating scenarios, characters, and whatever around the people that are talented enough physically to be called up, instead of doing it the other way around.
Yeah,
creating some kind of a off the wall idiotic gimmick for somebody that it may be totally foreign to their personality. You know, to me, when you're bringing a kid up and everything, to make him realize his greatest potential in his business and everything, you can't throw too many obstacles in their way. You can't provide too many stumbling blocks for them, simply because they're not prepared mentally to handle it because they're so worried. They're so worried, first of all, about losing their job and their position. Secondly, what they're worried about is going out and having a lousy performance. And these are all understandable things.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to portray a character, is it not better to try to portray a character or try to build a character around what this person is really like down deep inside than it is to try to give somebody a real off-the-wall character to portray that that is not that person's, not anywhere near that person's personality? You know, I'll give you an example. All the kids that I've ever had anything to do with as far as training and stuff and everything, I give them this example. I said, you know, when I first put the mask on, I had to learn to work all over again practically because there's such a tremendous difference between working without a mask and working with a mask. So what I did, I said, I'm going to get this thing over, but how do I do that? So I got off, I really did. I went off all by myself where there was no distractions over telephones and traffic noises and radios or TVs and this and that and so on and so forth and people talking and everything. And I was went way out in the country, and I just sit out there and I kind of like meditating. And I envisioned myself in the ring. I envisioned myself how I wanted to be perceived. I envisioned myself how I wanted to look. Then I became my own most harsh critic. And I said to myself, now what kind of a person are you really down deep inside, and be totally and brutally honest with yourself. Don't try to glorify yourself because you think that you're not performing in front of an audience now. The only people there are you and your conscience. So I got to thinking, and I said, well, what type of person am I really? Yeah. I thought, and I came up with this answer. Type of person that I really am down deep inside is, you know, I don't take a lot of crap from anybody, but if I figured that in a head-to-head confrontation that's just about to happen between me and Les Thatcher and everything, that there was a way better, or at least an even chance of me getting my ass whipped, mm-hmm. then for me to go ahead and continue with this confrontation with Les and take the chance of getting my ass whipped, just so everybody could say, "Head damn boy, that old Joe Hamlin, he'll fight a buzzsaw and give a two turns head start." Well, taking an ass whipping ain't worth that kind of a reputation for me. Mm-hmm. So the person that I really am inside is I would try to make this situation as least volatile as I possibly could mm-hmm. until old Les was off guard and felt a little more relaxed around me and everything, and then when his back was turned, I'm going to bust a pipe right over his head. Well, that's the type of person I really am down inside, you uh-huh. know? And that's the type of character that I brought to the ring.
And that was what the assassins were, right?
Pardon me?
That was what the assassins were.
Yeah, yeah.
Somebody from the chat room asks if you believe that the sport should have an off season.
No.
Just no, like, can you elaborate or?
Why don't I believe it?
Yeah.
Because it never has been that way, and I don't believe in making that drastic a change in it.
Yeah.
I know we've made a lot of drastic changes and so on, some for the better and some maybe not quite so good. But by the same token, I think wrestling is a year-round sport, and I think that's one of the things that differentiates us from baseball players, football players, basketball players, and seasonal sport players.
Mm-hmm. Another person from our live chat room at WrestlingWeekly.com, they ask, what do you think the WWE could do as a business to move forward and give the workers a fairer schedule?
Well, the schedule they got up there now, with the exception of some of those overseas tours and everything, I don't think is that demanding.
Mm-hmm. They actually get more time off than we used to get off and work in a territory, right?
Yeah, well, yes. You know, I mean, go down there and work for Bill Watts, for Christ's sake. I worked 100, I think I worked 100 and, I forget exactly what it was now, but it was like 136 or 138 matches in 124 days.
Wow. That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's quite a bit. Another question from the chat room. They said, do you miss kayfabe?
Do I miss it?
Yes.
I don't miss it because I have never lost it.
Right.
The only time I miss it is when I'm talking to people that think they know everything there is to know about the inside of the business when they really don't know their ass from 15 cents.
Well said. What are your future plans for DSW?
I'm just going to run a few towns. That's all. You know, I'm not looking to try to be any type of major promotion and so on. I just got there's a bunch of young kids around here that I've taken a liking to, that I think deserve an opportunity to have the advantage of my knowledge instilled in them, and maybe someday they'll make it in the big time, you know. And that's that's everybody's goal. I don't care what anybody says, you know. You got a few old timers that are still in the independent circuit and everything that know that they're past it, and they just do it for the love of the business. Mm-hmm. But you got a lot of these young kids and everything that they're doing it because they want to make it big, and they're willing to do whatever it takes to make it big and everything. But unfortunately, nobody has spotted them, nobody has seen them, and nobody has given them the opportunity to make it big or to train with people that can put them up there, you know, and so on. So that's basically the void that I'm going to try to fill. You know, without overdoing it, without killing myself and everything, I just like to stay busy and hell, I really don't know a whole lot about anything else other than the wrestling business.
Well said. I want to thank you for being on the show, Jody. We're out of time. Very interesting interview. We really enjoy having you on, and we'd love to have you on again in the future.
Well, you just call and we'll set it up. I'll be glad to come back anytime.
Thank
Joe,
you.
Joe, always
much.
A pleasure. God bless you, my friend. Take care.
Same to you, Les. Always good.
Joe
Take
Hamilton,
care.
Guys, here on Wrestling Weekly. It's going to wrap it up for this abbreviated edition of the show. Next week, Les, Dory Funk Jr. is going to be with us.
All right.
Yeah, so it's going to be a good show. Keep checking WrestlingWeekly.com. We'll have the...
Real quick, let me plug
sure.
My appearances. August 10th, 11th, I'll be at the NWA Legends Convention in Charlotte. I'll be in the South Atlantic Wrestling booth to greet fans, do pictures, autographs, and so forth, and talk wrestling. And then I'm doing an all-day training camp in Detroit for the Rage Dojo August 25th. If you're interested in the Charlotte thing, you can check out SouthAtlanticWrestling.com or NWALegends.com. If you're interested in joining us for the training camp in Detroit August 25th, you can contact American Kickboxer at AMKickboxer@Hotmail.com and look forward to seeing some of the fans.
Les Thatcher, always a busy man.
Well, not as busy as I should need to be.
We'll see you guys next week. Keep checking us out Tuesdays, 8 to 10 Eastern, Wrestling Weekly. We'll see you next week.